this is where Texas politics gets interesting. Here again are two guys named Jason, some great guests, and cold Texas beer for another smart conversation on Y'allitics, the unofficial political podcast of Texas.
Welcome back, everybody, to another edition of Y'allitics.
It's almost Christmas time. What'd you get me, man?
Well, nothing. I haven't gotten you anything.
Well, you have some days off, so you can go shopping.
Well, no, here's the thing. Yeah, we've got some time still. Yeah. And you can check back with me in like 2 weeks, and then I'll confirm that it was actually nothing
that
I got
at
you.
All. Great.
Because it just works out that way.
So we like to think that we have a handle. You know, you're from Texas. I've lived in Texas 25 years, quarter of a century. We like to think
you're
that
a transplant.
I'm where all the original Texans are from, which is Tennessee.
Oh,
if
boy.
You think about Sam
this
Houston,
again.
Davy Crockett, and the like.
Okay.
But you know, we've been around for a minute. We've talked to a lot of folks over 25 years here, and your lifetime here. This is something I have never heard about. This episode we're about to do.
I like when that happens because it's something
exactly.
new and you're learning something, but at the same time you think, what's wrong with me? Like I'm plugged into this stuff and I had no idea that this was going on. And it's not something new either. It's been going on for a long time.
For 25 years.
Yeah, and so thankfully I came across this article from a paper. Well, I call it a paper. It's, you know, digital.
Online news source.
It was online news source, and I didn't even know of this source before, but it was a pretty impressive source. I looked through it, and it was very legit, and I had no idea that this was happening.
And explain what this is, because most people would hear
no,
this.
No, let's just keep calling it this and not tell people what it is that
well,
we're talking
we're
about.
Well, we're 7 minutes in now, so let's go ahead and explain what we're talking about
It's a
here.
Homeless court.
It's a legal court that homeless people go to.
Yeah, and how specialized, and you know, every now and then you'll see a court that deals with, you know, some homeless issues and some other things. This is what they do.
Yeah.
This is the population they serve. And we know that so many of the cities here in Texas have really struggled with their homeless populations in many different ways and tried to get a handle on it. And you see the problem, you know, exploding. I mean, I know in Austin several years ago, boy, they really went through it. Dallas has had real issues with homelessness and trying to, you know, get that under control and figure out solutions. Houston, though, has been a model for the country in the way that it's handled homelessness in recent years. And you know, there's some struggles with that program as far as getting the funding and keeping that funding coming in. But one aspect of what they've been doing is eliminating some of these legal issues that homeless people face. And I'm not talking about for serious crimes. We're talking about for these really low-level misdemeanors. Yeah. And you go, well, you know, they're low-level. But the problem is they come with fines, and you know, somebody who's homeless does not have the money to pay those fines, and those fines just keep escalating.
And there's a reason why this court and the judges, these are real judges in Harris County, in the city of Houston, at municipal court, there's a reason why they want to get rid of these fines on behalf of these folks here. Mm-hmm. And that's what's so fascinating about this. And after 25 years,
It's 18 years.
It's been around for a while nationwide in some other cities on the West Coast, but they want to expand it.
Mm-hmm.
Other officials in Houston, constables, people at the city, the new incoming district attorney in Harris County thinks this is a great idea, and they want to expand it. So you track down the guy in charge of this, and he has a great story himself.
Yeah, his name is Scott Moore. He is the community resource manager and coordinator, or actually, let me do that again.
Go ahead. Take two. He is the...
Scott Moore. I like to get people's titles right. It's a long title, though. He is the Community Resource Manager at the Coalition for Homeless of Houston-Harris County. Long title there, but this guy has been there from day one on this homeless court. A lot of times you'll see somebody, you know, jump into something. They stay with it several years. They move on to the next thing, the next thing. He has been with this from day one and is still with it all of these years later. And like you said, he's got a very personal connection to this.
Yeah. Some fascinating stories he shares here. And more than anything, he talks about why this is so necessary in the city of Houston.
Hey, y'all. This is where Texas politics gets interesting for another smart conversation on Y'allitics.
Scott, thanks so much for being on with us. I have to confess, until I saw a write-up about you all in the Houston Landing paper there in Houston,
I didn't know that this even existed, and it's been around for a minute.
Yeah, we've been around since 2006. So it's been, what, 24 years now? Or 18 years.
Okay, that's embarrassing.
Where have we been, Wheeler? I mean, come on. We lived there at that point, and we didn't know about this.
And Scott, to this day, this is the only program like this in Texas, isn't it?
I'm not clear on that. I believe that Dallas does have a form of homeless court, and so does Austin.
Okay.
I do know that San Antonio has contacted me over the years trying to start one there. But, yeah, we're the original.
Wow, maybe I just have a real blind spot for homeless courts here in Texas. Can you tell us a little bit about how this works? Like, what exactly the homeless court does?
Sure. Right now, we're just partnering with the City of Houston Municipal Court, which makes it really easy for us because only Class C misdemeanors are able to be resolved, and they're only filed Class C misdemeanors with that court. Soon, we're going to be working through Harris County, the JP courts. That's a mixture of A, B, felonies, blah, blah, blah. Those higher tickets really don't qualify for a homeless court, but definitely the Class C misdemeanors do. Mm-hmm. But currently, the only way to get on the docket is to be referred from a case manager or caseworker of a program that you are currently working or have already completed in order to get in front of a judge to get everything dismissed.
And Scott, for people like Wheeler who don't know what a Class C misdemeanor is, what kind of charges do these include?
It ranges everything from any type of vehicle, speeding, jaywalking, sleeping on the sidewalk, public urination. Our two biggest tickets are no insurance and fare evasion off the rail.
And there are about 70 of these across the country, I was reading, and you have a veteran judge doing this, Judge Imelda Castillo. How did you convince her and the city and others that this was a good idea, this needed to be done?
Well, originally, the first homeless court was in San Diego through Steve Binder. And some of our service providers here in Houston, you know, 18 years ago, said, we want to start this here. And we had a judge, Judge Stephen Kirkland, who also found out about this court docket. He goes, I want to start this in my courtroom. And so he did. We started a pilot. And then his boss, the presiding judge, at that time, took it in front of city council to get an MOU between the coalition and the city. And I've got judges that keep coming at me going, I want to do this. I want to do this. I want to do this. So it's not lack of enthusiasm or compassion. It's just, it's Houston. It's what we do in Houston.
Why is it, Scott, would you say that judges want to be a part of this and are so eager to move this idea along? What's behind that?
I think there's a couple things. Number one, it's more of a restorative docket, so it's not punitive. And they get to really understand and learn of the difficulties that our clients go through and the barriers that they face. That's number one. And number two, the courts really like it because they're clearing up these cases that they would never clear up. Hmm. Never.
What do you mean they would never clear up? Can you go into that a little bit?
Sure. I'll give you an example of fare evasion off the rail. If you don't pay $1.25, that ticket is $75.
So if you don't pay the $1.25 to get on the rail line because maybe you just don't have it, you get a ticket if you get caught and it's $75.
It's $75. If you don't show up for court, that ticket goes up to $250. Hmm. And a warrant is thrown, which is another $250. So for not having $1.25, it's costing $500. Now, for someone who is unhoused and is in crisis, they're not going to pay that. So the courts are very happy. They're very happy that we're bringing them to the courts and clearing off their dockets.
Hmm. So it's a way to clean up the dockets there and see that justice is done, even though it's restorative justice, as you mentioned there. Jason mentioned the article in the Houston Landing. I want to ask you about something in there. One of the first lines, Scott, captured me, and it says, the people who come here are facing low-level misdemeanor charges, as you mentioned, but they're not called defendants. Instead, they're called clients. They don't leave bowing their heads in shame. Instead, they walk out smiling.
And the judge, Imelda Castillo, she congratulates rather than admonishes. If I were to show up at this court, what would I see?
You would see a normal court docket. It's just that the only difference is in this docket is that we decided not to have a uniformed bailiff in the courtroom because that would trigger many of our clients with mental illness or substance abuse. That would just scare them away. So I made a commitment to become the quote-unquote homeless bailiff. So I'm there every time. Out of the years, I probably only needed to de-escalate to maybe a few handfuls of people going into crisis, whereas someone in uniform really does not know how to de-escalate. They just know how to incarcerate.
Scott, you talked just a moment ago about how quickly a missed fare on a rail line, you know, if you don't have the money to pay out of pocket, how that can quickly, you know, turn into you owing $500 to the court system and there's a warrant out for you because you can't pay it, you haven't paid it. That leads to another insidious side effect, which is you lose the ability perhaps to have your driver's license or to have that renewed. And man, you start thinking about that ID and everything that that's useful for. Let's say that you are trying to, you know, transition out of homelessness and get a place. They want an ID. You're trying to transition out of homelessness and get a job. They want an ID. This becomes very cyclical, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. That was our number one barrier when we started this docket, and it still is today. The number one barrier, because in the state of Texas, if you owe any monies, have outstanding warrants or tickets, you cannot renew your driver's license or obtain an ID. Well, if you don't have that, you can't sign a lease. You can't gain employment. You can't even apply for your Social Security or disability. So yes, it still is our number one barrier. And that's still sadly is the main reason why we're doing this.
And Scott, when I think of the homeless population and getting to court, I'm thinking there's probably transportation issues, and there may be no alarm clocks, just a host of pitfalls with this group here. What happens if someone doesn't show up for this? Because in regular court, if you don't show up, there's a warrant out for your arrest.
Nothing happens. Everything just stays the same. There are no additional warrants issued.
Do you try to get that person in at some point to clear up the case, or how does that work? Someone go out and find them?
Absolutely. Another reason why a caseworker, an outreach worker, they're attached to a social worker, so it's their job to follow up with them if they'd miss court. We understand we do have a high no-show rate, but it's because if you're living on the streets working with an outreach worker and you need an ID just to get into the emergency shelter, because you need an ID to get into shelter, they need to start working with them right then and there. But when you're in crisis, you're right, Jason, they don't know what time it is. They don't know what day it is. They forget. Not a problem. We'll just get you on another docket. So that is not a problem.
Scott, there are going to be people who listen to this who say, well, oh, you know, if there's somebody urinating on the street and they get a ticket for that, or, you know, maybe they've been harassed by someone who's homeless in the past, they're going to say, no, we need a tough on crime approach. What is your argument to somebody who's thinking that way?
Well, number one, CFTH, the coalition here, we believe that housing is healthcare. And so why criminalize behavior on someone who's in crisis? I don't understand that.
Can you talk a little bit about why this approach has been so successful and why you have other judges who are asking to be part of it? Can you talk about recidivism over the years? How many people who have come through this homeless court, how many of them do you see again and again and again? Because in the regular court system, that happens quite a bit.
Sure. We just pulled some numbers through our homeless management information system, our HMIS, some data saying that, and I only pulled it back from 2011. So since 2011, 94% of those that came through this docket came through once. 5.4% came through twice. 0.02% came through three times. So what I see, not only anecdotally, but in the data, is that once we get them housed or out of their crisis, they do not reoffend.
Let's continue.
Impressive.
Yeah, the numbers are really impressive here. I want to continue talking about the numbers for a moment. Last year, I believe I read that the program helped participants eliminate $138,000 in fines. Do they pay fines at all? Is there any measure of justice, as Jason said, for people who say, well, they clearly were doing something they shouldn't have been doing to get the citation to start with? Well, what's the idea here, to pay a fine or to do something else?
Well, what they're doing is they're working their programs. And so one of the things that if you would come to one of our dockets just to observe, you would see the judges and myself and their caseworkers say, good for you for doing what you're doing. This is the city's way, the coalition's way, and your program's way of saying, we know how hard it is to get off the streets. So we're just going to clear off your legal issues so you can move freely exiting homelessness.
And do they, and when you say they're doing their programs, what do you mean? What are they doing?
Oh, they're doing tons of stuff. They're filling out applications to housing. They're filling out, they're going to DPS to get their IDs. They're going to the doctors to get their verification of disability if they need that. They're looking for apartments with their caseworker. They're looking for places to stay. They're actively engaged.
So that's an important piece of this, for people who don't really understand what the homeless court is about. This isn't just about like, hey, let's get you all in here. We know you didn't mean to do what you did. We're going to forgive it and let you go. You have to show, as the person who has gotten this ticket or this citation, that you are taking steps to try to transition to a life where you're not breaking the law anymore and you are improving yourself.
Exactly.
You know, Scott, with two decades now of experience here in the city of Houston, there's now talk of expanding this out. You have judges that are seeing the benefits of this, but there are other municipalities, the county, some constables are also interested in expanding now?
Absolutely. Judge Dubel, who's in Precinct 1, Place 1, approached me after his election and said, I want to start this in my courtroom. And so we've been slowly working on that, but we're waiting on the district attorney to actually take office in a couple of weeks, and he's on board with it as well. So we are going to open up through all the 13 different JP courts. We don't have all those JP judges on board yet, but we do have several.
And by doing that, Scott, how many more people do you think you'll be able to serve?
That I don't know. We need to just like we started 18 years ago, let's pilot this, see if it works, get the data together. Are we making a difference in people's lives? We won't know that for at least another year or two.
Why is it just now that this is expanding like this and getting so much attention, do you think? I mean, you've been around, this court has been around for so long. What is it that's sort of catalyzing this right now to where it's becoming a bigger thing?
Ooh, a couple things. Number one, because of the COVID dollars, the coalition was able to quadruple our staff. So now I have a communications staff. Thank you, Frida, to guide. When I started working here 20 years ago, there were only six of us in the office. Now there's over 80 of us. Spending the money wisely to get people off the streets.
Scott, how did you get involved in this work?
Thank you for asking. I actually took an internship 21 years ago. I was in a transitional homeless program for health reasons, and I wasn't able to find a job. So I took an internship here just answering the phones. I paid $4.25 an hour, 20 hours a week, and I never left.
Just to make sure I understand, were you homeless at one point after this medical issue? How long were you homeless?
I committed 2 years to that program.
So you know firsthand what these clients are facing when they come in here.
Exactly.
Has to help, doesn't it? You've walked in their shoes.
It does help. And I also am a big picture thinker. So it's like working for the coalition and having that lived experience combined really kind of helps not only the system, but it helps the individual as well.
Well, zoom out on that, the big picture there. For people who are watching this across the state or listening to it across the state, how is this helping the city of Houston?
Oh, wow. Brita, you want to take those stats on how we've reduced? We've reduced
but
homelessness.
Just generally speaking, how do you think the homeless court, Scott, is helping the city?
Well, it's clearing out the dockets. It's getting people off the streets. It's cleaning up the streets.
Cleaning up the streets, how so? Because you don't have people committing the same offenses?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Scott, if you had to take a guess in all of these years that you've been doing this, how many people would you say have been helped by this, roughly?
I hate to give anecdotal because we didn't keep stats between 2006 and 2011.
Oh, okay.
At least electronically. But it's been anecdotally probably a good close to 8,000.
Wow. That's a ton.
And it is.
And do certain stories or does a story stick with you? I mean, I'm sure that you have days that, you know, we all have hard days in the job. But is there a story that sticks with you that kind of makes you get up the next day and go, I'm still committed to this. I'm going to keep doing this because you remember that story.
Every single time I walk into that docket, I always get chills. And when someone starts crying, I start crying. You know, it's just, there's a reason why I'm there. But specifically a story, it's always the ones that there was a young lady, she was a young adult, she was 24 years old, morbidly obese, developmental disability. She didn't understand what was going on. She had over 333 tickets for the exact same thing every single day for over a year. An officer just threw 8 tickets at her every day, and she had no clue on what that meant. And when she walked out, she was like, I didn't realize I had all these tickets. And she was smiling, she was happy, and that was about 4 years ago, and I every once in a while I look to see if she's still housed, and she is.
Wow. And to make sure I'm clear too, this is part of Houston Municipal Court, so this is partially paid by COVID dollars you were talking about, and then is it partially paid by City of Houston dollars as well?
No, there's no dollars spent on this. The COVID dollars that I mentioned, the COVID dollars that I mentioned was us able to expand our housing capacity.
The Coalition for the Homeless able to expand the housing capacity. Okay, which we did a podcast on, Wheeler, I think you remember, not too long ago.
Yeah.
A few months back. So no dollars spent at all on the court, though, huh?
No, this is 100%. What 10% of my work is towards this court, that comes out of general operation funds. So that's private funding. We have not found any state, federal, local funding for this program. And honestly, there really isn't. Not unless you want to bring me in full time.
Are you in need of help though? I mean, you know, we talk about the idea that this could be ramped up and expanded into other courts. Are you guys able to handle that? Do you need help?
Not really. And the reason why I say that is I always have attorneys come up to me and say, could I volunteer? And I'm like, what can you do? The city it's a well-oiled machine. And I don't know if you know anything about judges or courthouses, they don't like change. So it's like, don't change something that's working. But basically the prosecuting attorney marks the docket. He dismisses everything except one case. And that one case, the judge throws a community service or a fine on. Well, we define that community service as their work and participation in their program. So they end up walking out owing absolutely nothing. And I asked Jonathan one time, I said, conversation outside the court. I said, Jonathan, why aren't you in the courtroom with your clients? And he whipped back at me and said, the state of Texas is my client. I was like, oh, that makes sense.
Scott, do you know how bizarre this sounds? I mean, I know you've been in this for a long time, and it's probably, you know, old hat to you. But here you are. You're not getting a lot of public money coming in to do this. You're not asking for more money necessarily. You're not asking for more volunteers or for help. Something is working. You're changing lives, and it's about to expand and expand dramatically. To the outsider, that's extraordinary. We don't usually hear that. Is that extraordinary to you? You live it every day, but do you realize how extraordinary that sounds?
Probably not, because I've been doing this for so long. But I will say that when we were starting out, and even to this day, if there's a conflict or something that needs to be resolved, because I am not an attorney, I'm not legal, I don't work for the city, I don't work for the county, I'm able to, just my personality, I act and then I ask for forgiveness. I just move forward, just keep moving forward. It gives me some freedom to have a foot in the judicial system, a foot within the HPD, a foot in the mayor's office, a foot everywhere.
Well, Scott, last question I had for you is something you kind of touched on earlier, but I want to make sure I understand. How much of a difference do you think the homeless court is making in the lives of these 8,000 or so plus that have gone through there?
Huge. Huge difference. Going back to that 94.4% who only went through once, we never see them again. And just a little side note, since I was homeless, the last thing I lost was my car. And I said, as God is my witness, I will never drive a car again. And I haven't driven a car in over 20 years. So I'm on my bike, I'm on the rail, I'm on Metro, I'm on the streets, and I run into people and say, oh, you're my judge. And I hear these success stories from people, that have gone through the program before.
My last thing for you, Scott, is what do most of us not get about homeless people? I think that people tend to have a profile in their mind of what a homeless person is. And, they live in the shadows. They're written off by a lot of folks. As I said before, may feel like they've been harassed in the past by someone who's homeless. You see this population from a very different standpoint. What do we not get?
That we're all human. Treat everyone exactly the same. Understand, though, if you have the capacity to understand mental illness, if you have the capacity to understand substance use, because those behaviors can be viewed to the general public as being aggressive, when it's not, they're actually in crisis. Say hello. Every time I say hello to somebody who's on the street or make eye contact, 9 times out of 10, they ask me for money. It's like, no, I don't carry cash, which is true. I don't carry cash. But, just talk. Maybe have a conversation. I have a neighbor who I ran into on an airplane coming back from vacation last year. And she's head of my neighborhood association. And she said something that just was brilliant. When she asked me what I did for a living, her first words out of her mouth was, oh, you work with our neighbors. So treat people who are living on the streets just like you would with somebody who's under a roof. The only difference between me having a roof over my head is that I can do everything they're doing, but in privacy. They don't have the privacy.
Wow. Scott, congratulations. Yeah, congratulations on this, man. It's fantastic to hear what the Coalition for the Homeless is doing in Houston with the homeless court, with the housing, with making best use of these COVID dollars that were spent. It's really impressive, and I think it's something that a lot of cities across the state really should be looking at.
Yeah, a tremendous job there, and we will look forward to see what happens as this expands further out. And one more shout out to the Houston Landing paper there, or online, the digital version. They did some tremendous work and helped these two longtime Houstonians over the years figure out something that's been going on down there for 18 years that we didn't know about.
We promise to be better next time.
Scott, thank you so much.
I appreciate y'all. Thank you.
Want to see the Jasons Talk Politics? Download the WFAA Plus streaming app for your smart TV and watch the latest episode of Y'allitics.